versus Clinton. State of Minnesota versus Clinton, Daniel Mattingly. Would counsel for appellant please introduce yourself for the record and begin your argument? You'll have 15 minutes for your principal argument and another 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Benjamin Cole. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Clinton Mattingly. We're asking for a reversal of the district court order denying suppression of the evidence in this case, because here we have a seizure of Mr. Mattingly, and that seizure was unreasonable. In this situation, the district court order provides us very little guidance as to how their decision was made. It's a very short order, has very little to no factual findings, almost at all. How it truly, the crux of, I think, the decision is made when you look at the transcript, and the district court relies on two cases, Reese and McKenzie. The Reese case is a situation where you have an officer seeing two vehicles, one parked in the roadway, one parked in a turn lane. Both are stopped, one is unattended, and one has two people inside, a male and a female. The officer in that case, unsure of exactly what's going on, but seeing the vehicles parked, seeing that looks like there may be an argument going on, pulls up in front of the vehicles and approaches. That was not considered to be a seizure in that case, but even if it had been, it was noted the judge or the district or sorry, the court found that the seizure was justified as they believed the woman potentially was being accosted, as well as the vehicles were potentially blocking traffic behind them, a traffic violation.
Can I take you in a different course? I know the district court perhaps didn't go down this line, but what is your understanding in Minnesota whether it is lawful to drive even for 10 or 20 seconds outside of the lane of travel on the shoulder, partially or completely on the shoulder?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe the state does bring up that argument as well. And there's, I guess, kind of two places this potentially could go. One, they use it as a failure to maintain their lane argument. However, failure to maintain lane doesn't mean that you left your lane specifically. It means that you did so unsafely. And here we have a
safe. Is that what the statute says? I thought the statute prohibits leaving your lane at all. You can't leave your lane of travel. You can't cross even the fog line. In fact, we have case law that says, relatively recently, because I was the author of the opinion, you can't even touch the fog line with your wheel. That means you're not driving entirely within your lane. So given that the shoulder is not part of the roadway, it's not a lane of travel, what does Minnesota law say as to whether anyone can lawfully operate a vehicle on the shoulder, partly or completely, even for 10 or 15 seconds?
Your Honor, you can, the law isn't specifically saying that the shoulder is not able to be used at all for any reason. There are situations where I believe you can use the shoulder. You can use it certain.
When you say you believe, cite the statute that would allow a vehicle to leave the roadway and operate on the shoulder.
Your Honor, I don't have the exact statute number in front of me. I apologize, but
you believe there is such a statute? You've read that?
There is the legality of being able to use the shoulder, especially in emergency
situations. No, I'm asking you whether you've read it in a statute.
I haven't read a statute that specifically addresses whether or not driving on the shoulder is lawful or illawful, or whether
if there are statutes that say that leaving the roadway, even touching the fog line, which by the way is the line that delineates between the lane of travel and the shoulder, if you're not allowed to even touch the fog line without violating the law, why would you suppose you could leave the roadway entirely over the fog line and continue driving?
Well, Your Honor, if you're talking about the failure to maintain your lane statute, that does allow you to leave your lane and leave the roadway if it's done safely. And here we have Mr. Mattingly, who has noted his intention to move to the shoulder and slow down. He did so cautiously. He did so and started moving his place, moving slowly and moving to the right. He then started to slow down to potentially stop on the shoulder. There are many different situations where a person may end up doing that and stopping on the shoulder. However, here he did not fully come to a stop And the record shows that he was not intending to fully come to a stop after realizing he did not have a reason to do that. He wasn't passing a lane of traffic. He wasn't passing somebody on the right on the shoulder, which would be illegal. And he was not using the shoulder to as truly as a roadway. He was using it as potentially an emergency stop situation or potentially a reason to place to park to check on something, as he thought there was an issue. However, there wasn't. The officer here, without seeing Mr. Mattingly come to a stop and without seeing Mr. Mattingly get out of his vehicle, without seeing any equipment violations and without seeing any mechanical defects, decided to activate his red and blue lights and pull the vehicle over. That situation of a vehicle moving onto the shoulder and still traveling was the same situation that's in State v. Just, which was an unpublished decision. But in that case, a vehicle was being followed by an officer. It activated its blinker. It moved to the shoulder. And when it moved to the shoulder, the officer then pulled in behind it and hit its red and blue lights and stopped it. That was considered to still be a seizure. Now, the difference between that case and this case is in that case, you had a vehicle that was weaving all over the road. It had jerked the wheel and cut the officer off and was driving extremely slow for the speed limit. And that gave the officer reasonable articulable suspicion to conduct a seizure. It was not the fact that it had moved to the shoulder that allowed the officer to pull the vehicle over. So the situation of meeting on the shoulder, certainly if he was driving for great periods of time, may be justification that there's something going on or that reasonable articulable suspicion that he is committing a traffic violation of some kind by using the shoulder as a roadway. But a limited use of the shoulder is not a violation of a traffic violation.
What would you say is the statute that most supports your view that a person can signal and then therefore move on to the shoulder without violating the law that requires maintenance of travel entirely within the lane?
Your Honor, I believe it's 169.18, I believe, is the discussion of what failure to maintain lane or the lane statute. 169.19 is the statute that addresses how to signal and proper signaling methods. I believe there are cited within my brief both the statute for failure to maintain lane and all these statutes that deal with signaling as well.
In your reply brief?
Correct, Your Honor.
Can I jump in with a factual question here too? I don't know. I don't want to cut you off, Judge Ross, if you have
more. No, that's fine.
Okay. How long do you think the vehicle was traveling at a slow rate of speed in the shoulder before the lights are activated?
Your Honor, it was not for a very long period of time. I believe the from the video start point to the period of time where the lights were activated was a matter of minutes. And some of that includes situation where he's not on the shoulder. So it's a matter of what, maybe a minute at most, Your Honor.
And do you think that the statute permits vehicles to drive in the shoulder for a minute?
I believe you're allowed to drive or move into the shoulder.
But move into is different than remain in while driving. So can I legally, let's say there's a lot of traffic and I'm just going to pull into the shoulder to avoid all that traffic. I'm going to go at a slow rate of speed. I'm going to signal before transitioning, but I'm going to stay in that lane for a minute. Is that legal?
No, Your Honor. There is a statute specifically that addresses whether you can pass a vehicle on the right using the shoulder. There's a specific statute that says that. There's an exception to that, of course, for buses. To be able to do that as you can.
So maybe my example was a bad one. Is there a statute that would permit, or what's your argument that a statute permits the specific conduct here, which is not just pulling into the shoulder, but remaining and driving in the shoulder, albeit at a slow rate of speed, but still driving in the shoulder?
Your Honor, the statute that it would address is, it's within 169.19. or sorry, 169.306 allows temporary use of the shoulder certainly to make a U-turn. And I know this isn't a U-turn, but that statute does also within 169 address other reasons why a person may be able to use the shoulder.
Okay, so which one of those exceptions or accepted reasons to use the shoulder is closest to what we have here?
What we have here is a person who believed that they had to stop because
I'm not asking what the driver believed. I'm saying the conduct that happened. Is there one of those sections that you can point us to that you think is the closest one to this conduct? Driving in the, I'll say the conduct that I think, driving in the shoulder at a slow rate of speed for, let's say, 20 seconds. What's this, the part of the statute that you think is the closest to that, to allowing that?
Well, here you're, the closest statute that would address that is to be able to use the shoulder to address potentially an equipment malfunction or some sort of emergency, which is what Mr. Mattingly was doing.
Can you cite the statute reference that you're referring to so we can look at the language rather than characterizing it?
Let me find it, Your Honor. Yes. I apologize for not having this directly in front of me on point.
And just to put my cards on the table, I'm not seeing it in 169.18 or 169.19. So if you have another reference, it might.
You're correct, Your Honor. Those are miscitations by me. I apologize. Your Honor, I don't have a specific statute that I guess lists all of these exceptions. I'm working off of, I don't have a specific statute that addresses whether or not you should be able to or not able to drive on the shoulder for a limited period of time altogether.
Assume there is no such statute. Assume we can't find one either. You agree that ends your appeal?
If there's no statute, then I wouldn't say that he is not allowed then to use the shoulder.
If the statutes say you have to operate in the lane of traffic and you acknowledge that driving on the shoulder is unlawful, why do you believe that the officer is not constitutionally permitted to initiate a traffic stop at the moment he sees the conduct that we're describing?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not saying that my belief is that driving on the shoulder itself is unlawful. I'm saying that there's no statute specifically stating whether or not you can drive on the shoulder for a specific period of time, making it illegal to drive on the shoulder for a short period of time.
Let's assume for the sake of my question that we believe that the statutes and case law say you're not allowed to leave the roadway and drive on the shoulder, and that there is no statute that provides an exception for your client's conduct. On what basis would we say that the officer lacked reasonable suspicion to initiate a traffic stop?
Your Honor, I think that the basis would be that the articulation from the officer, and I know that the articulation at the within the record was that there were no traffic violations.
Let's assume that we're going to follow the law on this one and apply an objective standard, and that the officer's subjective rationale doesn't matter at all to us in our de novo review.
Correct, Your Honor. It is an objective standard. But here I stand by the point of limited use of the shoulder is not a violation. If this court holds that any use of the shoulder at all at any times is a violation of the law, then yes.
Well, no, not any use at any time for any reason. Operating a vehicle for, let's say, 20 seconds on the shoulder, assume there is no exception that we find in the law that allows the vehicle to leave the roadway for that period. On what legal basis? If we were to agree with you, what would our holding say? Assume this is the first time we've ever addressed this question. What exactly would we say is the legal rule that we're going to apply to say that the officer's conduct violates the Constitution.
Your Honor, in this situation, the totality, I think, is the driver made limited use of the shoulder for what he believed to be an emergency or potentially an emergency purpose, being that he thought his ATV was going to come off the trailer and cause potential problems. However,
this is a part that I struggle with in thinking about this. Assuming that this is some hike of whether it's expressed in the law or implied, that there's some emergency exception that allows someone to essentially violate the statute and leave the roadway to go to the shoulder. The officer then has, I think, two things in his mind. Did we lose Judge Larkin? We should pause and, oh, there she's back. You're muted though, so we're not sure what you're.
I was intending to unmute, my apologies. Oh, okay. Wrong button.
So the officer, I think, is faced with two scenarios. Like, okay, there's a car in front of me. It's just left the roadway. Either it's violating the law or it's operating under the exception that Mr. Cole points out, which is the officer is experiencing an emergency. Under either of those situations, it seems to me at least arguably reasonable for an officer to put on his emergency lights behind the vehicle and either wait for the vehicle to stop to address the emergency or to wait for the vehicle to stop and address the unlawful conduct. It disabuse me of that assumption.
Your Honor, I am out of time. I'm certainly, if you would let me address it might take some time. I can certainly address it in my rebuttal.
Is that sufficient, Judge Ross?
I think it's fine. If you want to give it some time to roll around, Mr. Cole, and
okay,
come up with your home run answer.
While we're at it, Judge Larkin, may I jump in with a question that I'd like Mr. Cole to think about for his rebuttal as well?
Please do.
And that is, have we ever, or is there a case that addresses the activation of emergency lights, for the purpose of determining whether or not there was an investigatory seizure or some other criminal investigation that has started, but instead to alert oncoming traffic or to somehow protect the lives of the public. And that's why the emergency lights are on. Is there some case that would address that situation and the motive that a police officer might have to turn on the emergency lights, not to alert the driver, but to alert other people so that they can stay a safe distance away?
All right, thank you. We'll now hear from counsel for the city. Would you please state your name for the record before you begin your argument?
I'm William T. Helwig. I go by Bill, and I'm the city prosecutor for the city of Carlton. Your honors, may it please the court. I would first like to respond to the last question with regard to a case that recognizes the use of emergency lights, not simply for conducting a seizure. That would be State v. Hansen, 504 Northwest 2nd, 219, Supreme Court, Minnesota Supreme Court, 1993, which held that the use of flashing lights does not necessarily indicate a seizure. A reasonable person would know that when it is dark out, that flashing lights also serve other purposes, including warning oncoming motorists. This is exactly what the deputy testified to as the reason for the use of his emergency lights, to alert traffic from behind and oncoming from the other direction, that there are vehicles stopped on the shoulder in the dark at that time. I would also,
Mr. Helwig, if that's the case, at what point do you think reasonable suspicion was required?
Well, to me, the officer was conducting an investigation as to the need for roadside assistance. If Mr. Mattingly, as in the video, you can see after the officer stops behind his trailer, officer gets out of his patrol car, Mr. Mattingly gets out of his truck and they're still separated. The deputy's still at the back of the trailer. If Mr. Mattingly at that point would have said, I thought I had a mechanical problem, but I figured out that I don't. So there is no issue. That would have dispelled the deputy's investigation into a need for roadside assistance. And the deputy would then would have no further reason or no reason for further investigation.
Unless driving on the shoulder is unlawful.
Yes. Yes. If Mr. Mattingly would have stopped immediately on pulling over, then that would have been, then I believe simply telling the deputy that he determined there was no problem, that would have dispelled the situation. But continuing to drive down the shoulder, continuing to use the shoulder as a driving lane, that would allow for reasonable suspicion for a traffic stop. The deputy did not, however, was not viewing this as criminal activity. He was still thinking that there was some problem. He didn't know, maybe the driver was having some type of a medical emergency and was just kind of crawling along the shoulder there while he's driving. If the deputy would have simply driven around and gone by at that point and not stopped to investigate, and the driver had actually been having a heart attack, he would have been failing in his duty to help to maintain the public safety. That's what they're out there for, not simply to stop criminals, but to assist individual citizens who are in trouble. But he had a valid basis to stop the vehicle for driving along the shoulder. And then once he talked with, of course, Mr. Mattingly then came back to the deputy, and it's obvious from the video that he told the deputy that he needed to check the straps, the tie-down straps on his trailer, because that is exactly what he did then. He bent over, checked the tie-down straps. The deputy assisted him by shining his flashlight for him so he could see what he was doing. But in the interaction, the deputy also observed indicia of intoxication, which allowed him to expand the traffic stop and ended up with an arrest for driving under the influence.
So you talk about it in terms of expansion of the stop, but it seems to me that the real argument is one in the alternative. Either there is a basis to investigate some criminal activity, we've talked about that, or if this is an instance where the officer is trying to protect the public roadways and make sure that everything's okay, the point at which you're saying there's reasonable suspicion to conduct some kind of criminal investigation is the point at which the officer observes these indicia of intoxication.
Well, that's the point where he has, he can expand the stop to further investigate.
Right. But again, if the stop that we're talking about is not a Terry stop yet, it is just some well-intentioned officer who's going to help the driver make sure that the vehicle is safe to get back on the road. And once that's happened, they're going to get back in their respective cars and drive away. There is no stop. There's no Terry stop. So what you're really arguing, I think, is that there was no suspicion needed at all for that part. And at the point that the officer observes indicia of intoxication, that's the point at which you would start this analysis of whether there's a basis to suspect a crime has been committed.
Yes. And in the officer's mind, that's the way he approached it. But what I'm saying is that from an objective basis, the officer would have had reasonable suspicion to stop the vehicle for driving, for using the shoulder as
right. And I understand that there's two different ways to potentially justify what the officer was doing.
Yes.
One's more subjective, given what he testified to. And then you have this alternative view regarding whether or not there was some criminal activity in using the shoulder.
Yes, and that's what the judge was referring to in his order, that there was that in the judge's mind, he saw an investigation into the need for roadside assistance, but said, but there was also an objective basis for the stop anyhow, for a stop to have been made anyhow. So it, under the judge's order, he was saying that the stop was valid, whether it was for a criminal investigation, it could be found valid, or whether it was for an investigation to need for roadside assistance.
Counsel, I've looked at Hansen. Thank you for your citation to that case, which clearly does say that use of squads flashing lights on the side of the road in and of itself does not necessarily result in a seizure. And there might be valid reasons to do that that have nothing to do with criminal activity. So I guess what my question is, so if we were to conclude that what happened here was the officer had a basis to think that the driver was in need of assistance, therefore put all on his lights and pulled over, isn't the legal conclusion, or couldn't the legal conclusion be that was not a seizure? There was no seizure at that point. However, yes. Once the officer starts communicating with the driver and smells alcohol, we kind of go from, well, there's no seizure, the officer is just doing a welfare check, to, well, now the officer has justification for a seizure because he smelled the alcohol.
Yes.
So am I thinking about that correctly, in the sense that if the conclusion is, well, this was a welfare check, putting on the lights in and of itself didn't make a seizure, that we would conclude there was no seizure when the officer simply pulled over and had his lights on? The seizure didn't happen until later, and at that point, there was a basis for an investigatory seizure.
Yes, and it's obvious that was what the officer's understanding was, because if the officer was treating this as an actual seizure at the time he turned on his lights, then when Mr. Mattingly got out of his truck, the officer would have immediately told him to get back in his truck. And the officer would have approached him at the truck door and then requested license and insurance information, but he didn't. The officer waited for Mr. Mattingly to come back to him and ask if there was a problem, obviously, because Mr. Mattingly told him, again, it's clear from the video, must have told him that there's an issue. He thought there was an issue with his trailer tie-down straps, because then he and the deputy both then checked his tie-down straps, the officer holding the light and assisting him in making sure they were tight.
I don't understand in your brief the distinction between a welfare check and the attempt to offer roadside assistance.
Well, to me, they're the same.
Maybe I misunderstood your brief then. I thought your argument was that it was to offer roadside assistance and not a welfare check or a seizure. I think those are the words in your brief.
I guess I would have to take a look back at that. But to me, a welfare check may be to determine if the individual is having some type of a health issue, whereas roadside assistance is to see if there's some type of mechanical issue with their vehicle.
Just so I'm clear, you think there's a legal distinction between an emergency involving a vehicle operating on the road and the medical concerns of the driver in that vehicle? There's a legal difference between those two and an officer's?
Yes, because a welfare check is much broader. Officers do welfare checks on individuals in homes, pedestrians on the side of the street, whereas
I'm trying to understand if you think there's a legal difference between whether there's a seizure or not in a welfare check versus what you could describe as an emergency roadside assistance.
Just
to put my cards on the table, I don't see a difference. I don't understand how there would be a difference.
Right. For an individual driver. Excuse me, Your Honor.
Could I build on that? Because what I'm struggling with is a welfare check a seizure? And then we say, well, yes, that's a seizure, but it's justified by something other than suspicion of criminal activity. And the reason I'm thinking that is because the Hansen court doesn't describe this as a welfare check or a safety check. The Hansen court just explains that when it comes to a police officer's use of flashing red light on the side of the roadway, a reasonable person would know that while flashing lights may be used as a show of authority, they also serve other purposes, including warning oncoming motorists in such a situation to be careful. So it seems that what Hansen is getting at is there's not a seizure. And so what I'm wondering is, are we talking about apples to apples? Because when we talk about a welfare check, doesn't, and doesn't the case law say that treat the welfare check as a seizure, but say it's constitutionally permissible because of the reason for it, as opposed to saying, well, the welfare check, it's not a seizure. Whereas the Supreme Court seems to be saying use of the red lights on the side of the road may not be a seizure, in which case we don't even talk about the justification for it. We just talk about, well, that driver and that circumstance would not have a reason to believe that, you know, he was seized and not free to go.
Well, I don't know that a welfare check is required to be considered a seizure. To me, it would be similar to a check for roadside, a need for roadside assistance. In either way, the officer is checking to see if there's some assistance that's needed, whether it's for an individual in the vehicle or assistance for the vehicle itself. Neither one of those would qualify as a seizure. I think it's a responsibility of law enforcement to do those checks when there's some evidence that there might be a problem that needs to be investigated.
Just to clarify, frequently when it comes to welfare checks, it involves circumstances where the officer has to enter into someone's private space, where there is a constitutional moment because you're entering someone's home or some other place where there's an expectation of privacy. But here we're talking about just whether a person is seized or not, mm-hmm. which is an altogether different question. And so whether it's a welfare check or an emergency stop or just a friendly greeting on the road, I think all of those, in any of those, none of those circumstances is a seizure actually occurring. It seems to me, that's why I was lost as to the distinction you were trying to make. I didn't see any case law supporting the distinction or understand the logic behind it. So I wanted to explore that with you.
Right. And I would agree. I think that it's possible for a seizure to be required in a welfare check on a traffic stop. If you stop a vehicle and you see someone that appears passed out in the back seat, and they appear to need medical attention and the driver won't allow you into the vehicle, well, then I guess maybe a seizure is required at that point to provide medical assistance to the person, the passenger of the vehicle.
I don't think we'd be talking about, the Fourth Amendment speaks in terms of searches and seizures. And when you enter into someone's space, that would be in the search category, not the seizure category, I think.
True. So right. And in the motor vehicle context, I don't know that there's a difference. To me, I don't think a seizure is required for either one. I think there's no seizure that takes place on an investigative stop to determine if there's a need for roadside assistance or a welfare check.
Right. Thank you, counsel. We'll now hear from appellate's attorney for rebuttal argument, please.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. First addressing, which I believe the state has already addressed quite a bit, Judge Bryan's initial question, that State v. Hansen case is a case where red and blue lights have been used in a situation that then was not considered a seizure. But however, those circumstances were of a vehicle.
Let me make sure you're being very clear too, in light of Judge Larkin's question. I understood that to be the case as well, that the court determined it was not a seizure for the purposes of the Fourth Amendment. So when you just said it, that the use of the lights was not a seizure in Hansen, I want to make sure you're using those words carefully in light of Judge Larkin's question.
Correct. In this specific case, under the totality, they did say that no seizure occurred, even though lights were used. That doesn't mean that the activation of the lights doesn't mean a seizure does can occur. The distinguishing factor mostly between the Hansen case and the case before the court here is a moving vehicle and a non-moving vehicle. A moving vehicle, as this court has said in State v. Bergerson, a moving vehicle seeing red and blue lights, a reasonable person would feel a duty to be bound to submit and pull their vehicle over until they realize that they were not the subject. Right.
It seems to me those are two different questions. The question of whether or not lights activated behind a moving vehicle is a Fourth Amendment seizure is a different question than, let's say there's a subjective determination that we have to go to determine whether or not there was, we'll call it a welfare check or we'll call it roadside assistance, right? It seems that those are two different questions. And why, if it is true that under Hansen and some other cases, it's not a seizure to activate your emergency lights to determine whether assistance is necessary or do a welfare check, what sense would it make to make that distinction based on whether the car is moving or not?
Well, Your Honor, that was the big crux of that Hansen case, is the vehicle was already stopped. The person was already, it was already stopped.
I think there was some work, some effort done in Hansen to distinguish those facts from another case where there was a welfare check done on a stopped vehicle. But my question is something different. In terms of this decision that it is not a seizure under the Fourth Amendment to activate your lights, or not necessarily a seizure when a cop activates the patrol car lights. Based on that conclusion, that sometimes you can activate your lights in order to protect the public or to do a welfare check, what sense does it make if the person you're concerned about is in a stopped vehicle or in a moving vehicle? Why would we make that distinction?
Because, Your Honor, it goes beyond just that, but it's the totality of the situation. It's the show of authority. A person in a moving vehicle seeing red and blue lights.
I mean, again, I understand that from a Fourth Amendment perspective, we're asking, does the driver think they are supposed to react in some way or not? But that's not the question. The question is it a seizure for purposes of the Fourth Amendment when an officer subjectively observes something and decides that they need to determine whether help is necessary, medical help, or some other type of help. And if at that point, I don't think it really should matter whether the driver observes the lights or not, because we're talking about a different motive for turning on those emergency lights. So again, help me figure out why that's so important, whether the car is moving or not, if there's some reason to believe that there's, let's say, a problem with the trailer. But why would we care if it's a seizure or not, as long as what we want the officer to do is to alert traffic around so that they can correct whatever problem there is? It's not about the Fourth Amendment.
It is still about the Fourth Amendment, Your Honor, because the idea of the welfare check goes beyond just the idea. It is rooted in the idea that an officer can approach basically a public place, just like any other citizen could. A vehicle parked on the side of the road, anybody else could also pull over and see what's and help them out. And a vehicle that would be moving is not in that same situation.
Well, hold on. When you say a vehicle a vehicle slows down from highway speeds and pulls onto the shoulder and is operating at speeds that are slower than highway travel. So going back to the original conundrum, either vehicle is violating the law or there's some type of an emergency, whether it's equipment or a medical emergency. So the officer turns on his lights in order to communicate to the driver, I'm here to help, and to communicate to other vehicles, avoid a collision. I'm trying to see, remember the Fourth Amendment, it's based upon reasonableness. And I'm trying to see how it is that you believe the officer's conduct under that circumstance would be unreasonable if those are the only real options that the officer is facing, either unlawful conduct or some type of an equipment or medical emergency.
I'm out of time. May I briefly answer?
That would be up to the presiding judge. And,
yes.
and she might also answer whether you're still permitted to answer the questions that were still floated to you to answer before.
Let me say this, you're permitted to answer, but just to enhance the answer, I'm looking at, for example, Lopez, which is a published case from this court, that distinguishes Hansen. And the reason it distinguished Hansen, it indicates that in addition to the use of flashing lights, the officer partially blocked the defendant's vehicle and opened the car door. So this was not like Hansen. So what about this case is so different than Hansen when if all we have is the officer pulling in with his lights on?
To try and potentially maybe address all of these kind of in one go here. First, we don't have a statute that says he drove on driving on the shoulder is outright illegal. There's a statute that I already cited, 169.18 subdivision 7.1, which talks about leaving your lane. And that's what's been used to talk about the fog line, because you leave your lane. It's not leaving the roadway. To address Judge Larkin, your question about the difference between Hansen, Lopez, and here is here we have a moving vehicle. We have an officer who really just says, I think there's something that might be going on in the record, thinks there might be a defect, but doesn't know. And before that vehicle stops, before the vehicle, which could have been a few seconds later, vehicle could have never stopped. He jumped the gun and decided, I'm going to activate my lights and pull the vehicle over. This is not so it reasonableness is still there. The officer reasonably had to believe that there was some articulable suspicion to justify a seizure. Now, whether there's a welfare check here doesn't exist, because the welfare checks when it comes to roadside stops have always been of vehicles stopped on the side of the road. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before you jump off quickly, I just want to know, make sure I understand the statute you're citing that I'd asked about. You're saying it's 169.18 subdivision 1 that allows
7 paren 1.
Subdivision 7.1?
Correct.
All right.
Any additional questions?
I think we'll let Mr. Cole run for the hills.
Run for cover. That concludes the hearing. You'll have our decision within 90 days. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you too for appearing early so we could take the case out of order.
No problem, Your Honor.
For hearing